You're listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
Joining us now is Louise Story, Wall Street and finance reporter for our partner, The New York Times, with an old narrative of how bankers make their profits and how, indeed, they profited during the worst days of the financial meltdown. Louise, first of all, good morning.
Good morning.
Tell us what you have here, because it really, if we understand the process sort of step by step, we really see at what places bankers, if not watched carefully, can dip into the flow of money and take profits that maybe weren't necessarily intended for the banks.
Well, this old process is really only coming to light now, John, because there are a ton of lawsuits out there from mortgage investors, you know, big insurance companies and asset managers who bought all these mortgage securities that totally soured. And they've been going back to the banks over the last year saying, hey, these mortgages in these mortgage bonds were crap and you should refund us for them. And the banks have been saying, you were sophisticated. No, no. And the banks have said, plus, we didn't really know what would happen with them. And now there is some new evidence emerging in at least one of these lawsuits that maybe the banks did know. And not only that, maybe they double dipped and stuck their profits in their pocket. So what I did is I looked at, well, how would they have done this?
Right.
And here's how it worked. You know, the mortgage originators, like a company like New Century or Countrywide, they
actually give the mortgages to people who are buying homes.
Right. They're on the ground.
Yeah.
Okay. They pass these mortgages up to the banks. The banks put them into these securities, sell them to investors. Okay. Now, after they put these mortgages into the securities, some of the mortgages right away started going bad. Within 90 days, within, you know, the first 3 months, people weren't paying their loans. So some banks would go back to the mortgage company and say, these were crap. So you need to pay us some money, make us good on this. And they would get 20 cents on the dollar or some other benefit. But what one of these lawsuits that's come out is saying is that the bank did not turn around and give that benefit to the people in the mortgage bond.
All right. So let's take this apart again just for a second. So I see that I'm understanding it here. The mortgages are applied for and filled out and actually granted by a mortgage lender. They're bundled together by these banks into securities, which have lots of mortgages. Some of them start to default. Inside this complicated security, maybe one mortgage is defaulting, but the whole security isn't bad, right?
Right.
Still, the bank is owed money because the mortgage is bad. They go and get the money. They should have passed it along to the people holding the security. Instead, they said, we'll just keep it here at the bank. We did all the work, right?
And that's what will be at dispute, because it's not even totally clear that in all of these deals, the banks would have to pass this along to the people who actually owned these bonds. I talked to a ton of people who do own the bonds who think, of course, oh, that money should have been ours.
But not only the money should have been ours, if you're doing this, you know they're
bad. You know they're bad.
Exactly.
If you're doing it within the first 3 months. But the thing that's really showed me too, because I talked to all these people along the process. I talked to the people at the banks who talked to the originators and at the banks who made the bundles and the people who were communicating with the mortgage bonds. And the problem is each of them said they only know their step of the process. So the people who went back to the mortgage companies and said, you got to settle up with me, this mortgage was bad, they told me they got millions of dollars at a go to settle on these loans. And they passed it up in the bank, but then they don't know what people higher in the bank did.
Two huge takeaways here. One, the system that was created, as we've described again and again, gives each player a tiny piece of the picture. So they're not actually seeing the whole picture. But
that's
the other
thing
is the banks are also, it sounds like, deliberately only looking at a tiny part of the picture to avoid what they can actually see better than the rest of us.
That's right. It really is a very murky money trail. In fact, there's no standard accounting. And so, you know, I'm very interested to see in these cases as they get the discovery and piece it all back together, stuff from 4 or 5 years ago, if we can learn that money was going into bankers' bonuses, for instance, that should have been going to these bonds.
And how is the revenue tracked? Does the federal government require that you disclose what pool the money came from? Or does it all just go in a big just kind of revenue pool and they can
there
divvy it out?
There is not standard accounting, John. And the thing, think about it this way, too. Sometimes they went back to those mortgage companies and said, give us, you know, some money. And they took the money. But sometimes they went back to the mortgage companies. The mortgage companies said, well, we'll give you a discount on your next purchase of 1,000 bonds. And so how do you account for that? Because they get the next ones cheaper. But of course, those next mortgages go into a different bond. But, you know, the bank, when they make that different bond, they don't give the benefit to that new bond or to the old bond. They just get the benefit. And so how do you account for all these deals, these side deals the banks cut on mortgages that they didn't even keep? They put them in the bonds.
A huge portrait of just how many cards the banks hold in this oblique, opaque environment financially. Louise Story, Wall Street and Finance reporter for our partner, The New York Times. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
I'm David Remnick, host of The New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.